Has Captain Picard been murdered?
He was vaporized.
Or has he turned traitor?
I say kill him.
And when Riker uncovers the shocking truth,
I want this ship prepared for battle.
Will the crew be led into an enemy trap?
The Forge Enterprise, we are under attack down here.
The shields are down.
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Transfer complete.
Welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Orton, reporting for duty.
And we have a very special guest joining us from a recent artifact smuggling expedition, Andy Chan.
Hi guys, wow. Glad to be back again.
It's Mutt from Indiana Jones and Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I'm so happy.
What was it like to swing with the monkeys?
Oh, I love it.
So have you traveled to an alien dimension yet?
Oh yeah, I found the crystal skull.
Okay, not a psionic resonator?
No, I didn't.
Did the aliens look better in real life than they did in that movie?
I'd have to believe, so.
So we don't have a conundrum this week. This week we're doing another throwback to a two-parter. The last normal two-parter of TNG, this is Gambit from Season 7.
What do you mean by normal, Cam?
Well, the last All Good Things isn't really like a...
It's not abnormal.
It's one episode as opposed to two episodes.
Well, yeah, you could say that about Encounter at Farpoint as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
This is the last normal one. Not the only normal.
I think he got you there.
Anyway.
Semantics.
Go on, I'm listening to your spiel.
I got nothing left.
Okay, well, you know what? Let's jump right into it. Mm-hmm. Andy, I'm curious. Did you watch this one the first time that it aired back in 93? Or what was your first experience watching this?
My first experience was on TV. And I do remember... I was actually watching Star Trek at that time. And I do remember having to wait that long summer... to, you know, watch if I figure out what happened on part two, that cliffhanger.
I think you're confabulating, because, listeners, during the cliffhanger...
I don't remember that.
I cracked a joke when we had, like, a kind of boring cliffhanger where, like, the warp nacelle is fired upon, and I was like, and everybody had to wait an entire summer for that. This is actually episode 4 and 5 of season 7.
But it felt like a whole summer waiting for the next week.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's the anticipation. Yeah. So, but Andy, go on after I've embarrassed you in front of all our listeners.
Well, I don't care, because this is one of my childhood favorite episodes, at least.
Yeah.
And I think, actually, this is the... second time I've watched this in recently as well.
Oh, really?
Wow. I watched the last couple months ago, I watched through all of Star Trek Next Generation from season 3 to season 7.
Okay.
So
you couldn't do seasons 1 and 2, could you?
No, I just decided to skip it. I don't have good memories about seasons 1 and 2. There's very few episodes. I think Conspiracy is like one of the ones that I liked.
Yeah. Well, you need to go back and listen to our recent podcast episode, TNG, seasons 1 and 2, What Went Wrong.
Oh, actually, and you know, I think I've seen that. I haven't seen that.
Good.
But as a child, I admit this, I think Code of Honor is one of my favorite episodes as well.
As a
child.
You're...
No, I totally did not get any of those racist undertones or anything. No,
But now it became one of your even more favorites after you did understand the racist undertones. Top 10 for you.
No, I didn't actually rewatch it. I just read the summary on Memory Alpha, and that told me to not like it.
Yeah,
so. Sure.
Some things are better left as nostalgia.
Well, you know, I'll go back to my childhood. This was an episode that I remember really liking as a kid. It had Picard the Pirates. There are renegades, mercenaries. I loved the design of this mercenary ship. I thought it was a fun swashbuckling adventure. Cam, you watched this a couple years ago. What was your initial reaction?
Yeah, I thought it was okay. Like,
Just okay?
Yeah, I was like, that was really, really minor as a two-parter. Yeah, I thought it was kind of like a piffle.
Okay, well, you know what? We've had a chance to watch it once again. Because, Kim, yeah. you'll admit when you watched Descent Parts 1 and 2 for the second time, yeah. you know, your feelings evolved a little.
Sure.
But, Andy, what was it like for you, you know, 25 years later watching this once again?
This one? Oh, it still holds up.
Okay.
Yeah, because this holds up way better than Descent does for me. Really? I hated Descent the second time.
Okay.
Watching it, like, last year, I hated Descent.
Really? That's interesting. That
was horrible.
What was it about Descent, just briefly?
I thought it just was very cheesy. It just seems very cheesy and...
The prison escape when Picard pretended to have a heart attack?
I don't even remember that. I think I started losing the... Oh, I think I know what it was. I didn't like the portrayal of the Borg. I didn't like what the Borg had become.
Right.
It was more kind of moving into that Voyager-style Borg.
Mm-hmm. But you really dug Data throughout the entire episode. That's the Data you wanted. You know, nobody's puppet.
Right, but going back to this episode, yes. Yeah. So this episode, yeah, definitely, I like watching this, and, you know, I'd be okay watching this, like, you know, every couple of years.
Okay. Well, hey, for me, I think it's more than a piffle. Thank you very much, Cam. This one, so I feel a little mixed about it, because there's a lot of really good stuff going on, mixed with, like, some long stretches of me just kind of wondering, why was this not just a single episode as opposed to a two-parter? So, honestly, like, I was very worried because, Cam, in the weeks leading up to this, you kept moaning and groaning that you're going to have to watch Gambit again, and I figured this is going to be, like, another Birthright, which, to me, that is far and away bottom-tier next-gen two-part episode.
Right.
You know what, watching again, I found it quite consistent from episode to episode.
Yeah.
There's some fat that I definitely would have trimmed here, but... I liked it. Like, it was, like I said, for a lot of the reasons, and I don't think it's just nostalgia from being a child, because, look, I've been critical of other episodes that I've liked when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But, Cam, you've had a couple years to sit on it.
Yes.
Have your feelings evolved, much like Data's feelings evolved for the first time in Descent Parts 1 and 2?
Guys, I just gotta say, I'm very excited for this podcast because we actually have some differing opinions.
Good.
I thought this was a really tough sit to get through.
Really? Okay.
Very, I've been looking forward tough. To this for weeks.
Oh, okay.
A
tough sit.
I thought this was a slog.
Like, okay.
I found there's stuff I like. So when we talk about, you know, what works, what doesn't, like, I have a lot of stuff for what works that I did enjoy, but I basically, I found the central story just mind-numbing.
Okay. Well, okay, let's start with, before we get into what works, like, let's address something here.
Mm.
As far as influences go, and we kind of touched upon it, or at least I did, with that Indiana Jones reference. Do you think this is the writer's attempt to do kind of an Indiana Jones sort of story?
I think it's heavily influenced from Indiana Jones, but I don't think it's necessarily a copy. I mean, I think there's also a lot of similarities from...
There's no monkey brains that were consumed.
That's actually not part of Indiana Jones. Oh, wait, no monkey brains.
Yes. Temple of Doom.
Yes, yes. Yeah. But I think this episode, I was thinking it actually has a lot of similarities to The Chase.
Okay.
The Charlie Sheen movie?
No. The episode of Star Trek.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I like the kind of the adventure, the mystery, what's going on, and then the big reveal at the end. Well, I don't know if this is spoiling for you, but the big reveal at the end.
Right.
If people are listening to this, they better have already watched the episode, so don't worry about spoilers here.
Mm-hmm. The big reveal at the end that, oh, you know, it's a message of peace.
Right.
I don't know, Kim, what are your thoughts about the kind of Indiana Jones allusions?
I mean, there's definitely the Picard artifact thing is definitely, I mean, although he reminds me more of Indiana Jones' father than Indiana Jones.
Oh.
Although it's, the voice is closer.
Yes.
And I could picture him, though, saying, this belongs in a museum. The ending is definitely very Raiders of the Lost.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
But
I was also thinking the Holy Grail as well. It kind of had that feeling at the end.
Yeah, at the end of Last Crusade. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay, well, Andy, let's start with you. What worked for you about this particular episode?
I liked the pacing of the episode.
It was not a tough sit.
No, it's not a tough sit.
There you go.
I love that it starts in media res.
No, it doesn't.
Doesn't that count as...
No, that's not considered in media res. But what you're getting at, though, is that it just plops you right in the middle of the story.
Yes, that's right.
In media res, it kind of refers to maybe it'll shoot you forward in the story, and then it'll go back and kind of explain things. Am I correct in that description, Cam?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
I'm not formally trained in storytelling like the two of you are.
We've had years of formal training.
We bore people constantly with our storytelling.
Believe me, be thankful you're not my girlfriend who has to listen to me talk like this all the time. Be thankful for other reasons you're not my girlfriend as well. anyways,
but it does pop you right into the middle of the story. Yeah. Don't know what's going on.
I put that on my notes right away, you know, and like
and that's actually just like just like the Holy Grail. They just pop you in with the young indie. You kind of know what's going on.
And I can imagine, like, earlier on in the run of Star Trek The Next Generation, they would have spent a long time building up Picard. He's on this mission. He has to go to this bar in the second act. And
the Mos Eisley ghetto cantina.
But I think it's just, like, on the part, like, kind of an evolution on the part of the writers who figured, you know, let's just put the crew in the middle of the action. It'll be a great reveal.
It was season 7.
Yeah.
I mean, they were making masks, for God's sakes. I mean, anything goes at this point.
Yeah. Maybe that's the reason that it had to be a two-parter. Or maybe that's the one of the concepts that...
No, it was going to be a three-parter when they're going to build it up to Picard, like, searching around, like, with his brush for the ancient artifacts originally, and then it was going to end with him getting vaporized. So.
Sure.
I mean, what do you think about a lot of the dynamic going on between Captain Data and the rest of the crew throughout this, Andy?
Well, I thought that was, I think they actually took that as an opportunity to kind of do character development for Data. And I'm not sure if, what was that episode where he was having the fight with his other first officer?
Redemption Part 2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think there's some parallels to that.
He was
kind of having his command questioned.
And it's interesting that Data doesn't really seem to get respect as a commander, at least initially. Yeah. You know, a commander of a vessel. So what did you think about maybe the Worf and Data stuff in particular, Andy?
I thought it was good for Data's character, but Worf's, Worf's character, it just, throughout the entire episode, I just saw him, I kind of had notes on like what I think each character's role was in the episode and what they were trying to do. And Worf, I just wrote, my notes are frustrated Klingon. So you just see him kind of like sighing and looking annoyed and looking frustrated. I mean, it becomes more and more overt as the episode progresses, and then kind of peaks at the part where he feels like he's ruined his friendship.
Yeah, Cam, he came off as really an ass, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's my favorite part of the episode, is all the stuff with Data and command. I think there's so much energy here. I love watching Worf bounce off him. I like that actually before we even talk about sort of Data as in being in command, I like when he's Riker's second in command.
Yeah.
And he seems like such a pushover. Like, you can see he's not I don't think he's a very good first officer. I think he's a better captain than he is a first officer.
Well, I don't know. Do you think Jellicoe liked him as a first officer? Remember, he got to wear the red?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, but Jellicoe is like the guy who's not going to give the first officer anything to do.
True.
You know, he's just going to be like, ignore him anyway.
But Jellicoe probably wouldn't demand to go on an away mission, much like Riker did.
Right.
So, but I get what you're saying about him being a bit of a pushover.
Yeah, but I like him as in command. Like, I like that, you know, Data shows flexibility. Like, one of the big things that I think would stand in the way of, like, an android captain, it would be the lack of flexibility, the lack of improvisational ability.
Yeah.
But I like that Data shows that. I like that, you know, he, you know, takes Worf into the ready room to just, you know, discuss his conduct. Like, I just love the way Data handles himself. And I think Brent Spiner is so compelling. Like, I could, you know, we've laughed many times about the Captain Worf proposed spinoff, but, like, I actually think a Captain Data show, you know, in a time where it would have made sense with Brent Spiner, would have been actually pretty compelling.
Yeah, if only Brent Spiner didn't blow up big in 96 with Phenomenon and Independence Day.
Hey, he's still big. Independence Day too.
Yeah, exactly. I hear you get to see his bare booty in that particular film. So
40 million opening weekend.
It's bringing in all the crowds. Yeah. What did you guys think about Worf and Data's discussion about friendship? Was it borderline cheesy? Like, I liked it, but I was like, you guys are really getting to the limits of like just cheesiness, like an after-school special.
No, I thought it was appropriate.
Yeah. It made sense to me from Data's point of view.
Yeah,
because Data would say sort of that kind of that awkward comment.
And Worf does redeem himself by saying, "No, you know what, Data, I've been the jerk.
It's not you, it's me."
Exactly. Yeah. So I do appreciate both their characters.
And you can see being why grown up. You can see why Worf would view Data as a pushover in that position too.
Yeah. Well, let's just use the example when Data finally says, make it so, and Worf goes, finally. That was a pretty awesome exchange there. Yes. What do you think about Data emulating Captain Picard throughout this episode?
I liked it. I liked the tugging the shirt.
I think it's something that only like regular viewers would catch up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's
yeah. It was
like,
subtle.
Subtle bone to throw, and it's like, oh, you know.
Do you think any other character on the show could have gotten away with it? What if Geordi was the acting captain? Do you think Geordi could have been going around saying, make it so, or tugging on his shirt?
I would have liked to have seen the scene of Geordi trying to socialize with the Klingon.
Yeah, that would have been good. No, Geordi would have been pissed off. He would have been like, you're pouring blood wine on my ship.
Because Corral, like that whole scene with Data talking to Corral is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And Corral, we should note, was played by the NBA player James Worthy.
Yeah, we had a lot of big stars. Of course, Sandra Huxtable.
Of course.
And one Robin Curtis played the Vulcan slash Romulan officer.
T'Lara. T'Lara slash T'Pol.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, what about the name T'Pol?
That seems like reused. I'm pretty sure there was another T'Pol.
Well, there's a T'Pah, yeah. And then, of course, T'Pol from Enterprise.
And T'Pring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that Tuvok? Oh, what was Tuvok's wife's name?
I don't remember.
I think her wife was a T-something, or his wife was a T-something.
Okay.
So, a Tuvok, maybe? I don't know. lots of big stars. They're bringing out their big guns and their checkbooks for this two-parter, of course.
Do you know how James Worthy got this job?
He auditioned.
He ran into Robert Riley on a plane.
And Robert Riley hooked him up?
Yes, Robert Riley went to the producers and pitched him as getting a guest spot.
Okay, hey, I thought it was great.
Yeah.
You know, he did exactly what he needed to as, like, this gruff Klingon who...
Actually, I think he did really well. He did, I think the role was like, it's like a comic relief kind of role, and he, even, I have a note here, just the physicality of him being so tall is actually just comical in itself.
Right, and like, because he's a non-actor, it would be really easy for him to look bad in a Star Trek episode. We've seen a lot of good actors look bad in Star Trek, just, you know, because of the direction or whatever. But I think he's perfect. You know, he just gets to be kind of stoic, stand still, let his stature kind of do the acting for him. That kind of fills in a lot of the blanks of the character. And just being so, just like, stone-faced when they're trying to please him or whatever, pouring the wine out. I think he's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and, you know, the writers were careful. It's not like they gave him tons of, like, soliloquies or anything like that.
Yeah, like, imagine if he had to do exposition.
They put him in a position to succeed.
Yes, yes, very much so.
So, well, let's flash back to part one a little bit. I do appreciate that between Descent part one and Gambit part one, they are picking up their game when it comes to phaser fights. Did you guys enjoy the phaser fight on that alien planet here? I thought it was a lot more intense than what we usually see in Star Trek.
I didn't really have any thoughts on it.
Okay,
you
guys are wrong.
It wasn't long enough to bore me.
Yeah, that's a good call. Like, I thought it was, it was more energetic than some of the older TNG ones where they just kind of stand still. But compared to the one in Descent, remember where they're like diving behind consoles and whatever?
Yeah.
This did not measure up. But one thing I began to think was, how do you aim a phaser? It seems like they can't hit anything. And I'm thinking, like, I've fired a handgun before. Aiming a handgun is, like, fairly easy. There's good sights on a gun. Is there any sights on a phaser?
I think it's just point and shoot.
Well, they don't do a good job. It must be pretty difficult.
Yeah, they're good at hitting those rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's say you're given like one of those laser pointers, and they told you to shoot it at like a... Look, we're facing a brick wall across the street from my apartment, and let's say there's a red brick, and you had to shoot the red brick.
Yeah.
You're probably not going to get it on your first try.
Right.
So
this is an efficient weapon?
No. I can't
also,
say it is.
Also, I'm pretty sure they use like wide beam mode. In previous episodes.
Yeah,
I just use wide beam mode.
I'm not a fan of wide beam mode myself, because it's like, like you said, Andy, why not use it every
single
time?
All the time.
And I was looking at all the enemy weapons. They all had like sights on them.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, enemy weapons are actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I dug them.
So why do the Starfleet weapons suck so badly?
There does exist the Starfleet rifle, though.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
But, you know, Starfleet officers, they're not like soldiers, you know, they're explorers.
No, but don't they have... Maybe pretty decent weapons training?
It's their equivalent of a flare gun, Cam.
But there's that episode in, I think, season one where they're doing war games.
Yeah.
And they're shooting all the targets pretty easily. Like, why is it they can shoot those, like, digital targets, no problem, but when it comes to, like, a bad guy who's not that far away...
Or even Guinan.
Guinan's
better than Picard.
No. The point of those war games is, like, they weren't supposed to hit the target's cam. And that's why they kept, like, they're like, so bad.
Avoid the moving objects.
Avoid the moving objects, and they kept hitting them because they're that bad. So, okay. There you go.
But I did enjoy the opening bar scene. Like, I like Riker being, like, undercover Riker. It's like, I'll remember that next time in a bar fight. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, finger guns.
Yeah. We also had, of course, Crusher the Doctor, whose motto is, thou shalt do no harm.
Sure.
Holding phasers to people's heads. Yeah. Okay.
That was Crusher's only appearance in that episode.
Was it really?
Yes.
Yeah, she wasn't in the observation lounge when Riker became acting captain.
Nope.
That was very strange. I didn't really understand that. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Well, what about Deanna Troi doing the interrogation at the start of the episode?
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, you know, she got her flip on.
That was much better than her kind of like counselor role on the ship, I thought.
I did actually, of the counselor role, like, I will defend that scene where she goes to Riker and tells him he should be giving the eulogy.
You're not
the memorial.
One that always hurting.
Yeah, I actually really like that. Because I like that she, you know, called him out on it. And there was, like, some conflict there. There was some energy. Something the rest of this was lacking for me.
Oh, dear. Cam. No, but, you know, okay, we're I think it's good because you're hitting on kind of something that sometimes lacks in Star Trek Next Generation, which is, like, conflict within the crew.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's talk of Troi saying, like, you can't be out there just seeking vengeance. It's irresponsible. He's like, look, I'm looking for justice, you know. It's a meaningless death. He was killed in a bar fight. Talking about Captain Picard, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he even said, look, I've got a hole in my heart. I don't want to heal.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you that, like, every time we start this podcast?
I'm like, look, Ben Yong is not coming back.
He quit the show.
Ben, you got to come back.
Yeah. I'm curious, Cam, I know you're not super high on this, but what else made me work for you?
I like the idea of Picard having the sort of alter ego of Galen. It's kind of like when Bruce Wayne goes undercover as, like, what is it, Matches Malone in Batman the Animated Series.
Sure.
It's like the costume is really unconvincing. Like, I feel like anyone would pick it out of a crowd.
Yeah.
But, you know, you throw on, like, you know, kind of some rumpled up clothes on Picard, and he's like, I'm Galen the Artifact Collector!
Well, you know? Hey, Patrick Stewart, you could tell he was having fun, like, being, like, this pirate.
Yes, did you know that was one of Gene Roddenberry's ultimate taboos, though? No space pirates.
Ah. Well, you know what? I think he has a point, judging by the Enterprise finale, These Are the Voyages.
Yeah, he'd be turning his grave when that was airing.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Well, I thought Galen the Space Pirate was great, although I didn't understand how, Riker didn't notice him sitting on the bridge with his back turned on that first scene.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. I mean, that's convenience for dramatic reveal.
Sure, I can live with it, though. Yeah. But it's not like a huge bridge.
No.
So, I don't know. What did you think?
Also, he thought he was dead.
That's true. He wasn't even contemplating, you know, that he could see Picard.
Yes.
Well, what did you think of Galen the Space Pirate, Andy?
I like Picard as the adventurer. And I think
You wanted some more Vash?
Yeah, I was going to say that. So there's that Robin Hood one.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the...
Cupid.
Cupid. And then there's Ryza.
Captain's Holiday.
Yeah, Captain's
Holiday. I know way too many episode titles. I'm sorry. But that's why I have to host a podcast.
Right. Yeah. Well, I like that his, you know, his alter ego of Galen is just an extension of his own obsessions. Because, you know, you've seen Picard loves his artifacts and his archaeology. It makes sense that his alter ego would be something that he could slip into that guise, you know, because imagine if he was just like, I'm a professional athlete. And they'd start calling him out on, like, athletic stuff, and he'd be like, ah, you know, he would just, like, not be able to fill. Like, I like that it's something that would be very natural for him to improvise.
Yeah.
You know, I thought he did really well was kind of when he's playing his tough guy mercenary kind of role, but then when he starts talking about the artifacts, he just turns into a slobbering nerd.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very true.
Yeah.
But when he's introduced as this badass, I still never figured out why he was very adamant that they kill Riker. He was making a very salient argument for killing Riker, and I was like, Galen, what's the game plan here? Like, what if they all agree with you?
Yeah, what if Boran had just been a good idea and pressed the button and killed him?
Yeah.
Actually, well, that leads to something that I noticed in this episode.
Mm.
It's called Gambit, after all. And actually, there's, like, several... There's a lot of these, like, you know, all-in kind of moves throughout the entire episode.
That's true. Okay. Yeah. So good thing it worked out.
No, I mean, that's the title of the episode.
Okay. Right? Yeah, no, that's true.
I just thought it was because they were X-Men fans.
No,
they came up with the episode title after they had already finished the script. They're like, you guys notice that there's a lot of... ...
Gambits?
Yeah. Well, I don't know, guys. Anything else we want to touch upon before we move into maybe what did not work in this?
I'm actually curious, like, for you guys, like, did, like Andy, you say, you know, you're a big fan of this. Were you happy with the resolution of the episode?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think it's very Star Trek.
Okay, well, I'll say this. Maybe we can kind of segue into what did not work. But okay. I think that the psionic resonator is one of the lamest weapons ever. But I do like the idea...
It puts thumbprints on people.
But I do like the idea that it can be defeated by peace. That's a very Star Trek...
It's a very Vulcan thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did appreciate that because I had forgotten all about that particular aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just like, oh my God, this is so, so cheesy.
Yeah.
Like, why get this psionic resonator when you can just shoot people with a phaser instead?
Right. Right.
So, Cam, why don't you kick it off? What does not work for you in this episode?
I really just did not find the power struggle aboard the mercenary ship compelling. And I think a big part of it is the character of Boran, who I think is one of Star Trek's most boring villains.
Do you think he was maybe miscast, or do you think it was in the script that... I wonder if it was...
He just has no, like, charisma.
Yeah.
And, I don't know if that's the actor Richard Lynch or if that's the writing. I mean, the writing doesn't give Boran... anything really interesting to play with.
He kind of seemed like a loser, you know, like nobody...
A bully.
People mutinied against him, not because he was, on the high seas and they're going to get stranded and die at any time. It's because, like, they had no respect for him.
Right.
Because essentially he pushes buttons and how come people didn't immediately mutiny when they realize that he's got, like, this button that will, like, go into their nervous system and...
Why hasn't someone killed him in his sleep?
I don't know.
Because it's like, once his back's turned, someone can just shoot him. Right?
Yeah.
Shh.
But, Cam, you have dark thoughts, man.
I noticed, too, like, he's modeled, he looks to me like modeled on Khan in Wrath of Khan.
Okay.
Similar kind of wardrobe, similar kind of look, although he looks like he's, like, kind of crossed with, like, one of the characters from Cats from Broadway.
He looks kind of like Ron Perlman from Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, yeah, and a lot of his crew are kind of wearing, like, rags, kind of like Khan's men, so it's sort of like, you know, the alpha male and, like, Picard has to compete, you know, against the alpha male while the crew are kind of all the followers.
Yeah.
But this man is no Khan.
Sure.
God, no.
Oh, I know. Here's the thing. I think there's maybe enough on paper that a better actor could have made this a more memorable villain.
You need to do something weird with it. Like, I mean, like Bane weird.
Just give him some sort of personality, some sort of tick, you know. I agree.
A weird voice.
Something. Especially if you're devoting, like, a two-part episode and he's the main antagonist.
And he has a lot of screen time.
Yeah, he really does. So, well...
And it's not like... I never felt like he was a character who was, like, a really interesting match for Picard. Now, we've seen Picard go up against Q. We saw him go up against the famous, you know, Cardassian in Chain of Command, who also has a, you know, a weapon that, like, causes pain, neural pain or whatever. Like, oh man, like, this guy was reminding me of that character, and, like, comparing David Warner's, like, really intelligent, intellectual Cardassian to this guy?
Well, how great would it have been if every time he used his remote control to harm people, Picard shouted, "There are four lights!"
Then he kicked Riker.
Yes. Yeah, I did like how he randomly kicked Riker on his way out the door during that one scene. We didn't see where he kicked him, which I thought was interesting. I couldn't help but notice that.
I feel like it was in the side. That's my guess. That's usually the thing.
The side of what?
Well, like in the gut.
But?
Sure.
Okay.
That's what you want to imagine. Yeah, I was thinking more in the stomach, but...
Okay. Hey, look, I thought that they were ambiguous with it on purpose. That's all I'm saying.
Like crotch stomped him.
Yeah, that's how I interpreted
There's
it.
No way Picard does that to his first officer.
I don't know. Like, he's really trying to sell himself as this space pirate.
The renegade artifact collector.
He needs a crotch stomp. Yes.
Okay, sure. I'll go with it.
Why not?
Boran would respond to that, I suppose.
Exactly. Thank you. Okay. Well, what did you think about Robin Curtis's return to Star Trek? I think the character...
I think she gets interesting... like, she has dimension added after... It's almost like it's too late. Like, I feel like she doesn't do anything through part one.
Part one, I didn't care at all
for
her. But...
And then, you know, part two, she's not really that interesting until Boran is... I can't remember if he's out of the picture or almost out of the picture.
Well, I thought she was interesting when she went to Picard and said, I'm not Romulan, I'm Vulcan.
Okay.
I thought that's when she
that.
Started to become interesting.
So that's
that
about,
point.
I think, like 20 minutes into part two.
Yeah.
So...
It took a while.
Yeah, so
and
she really only gets 20 minutes of being interesting.
And but I know, like, Bran is kind of the main antagonist, but she actually becomes the main antagonist by the end of it. So it's kind of like... Oh, but I don't know. It's still kind of nice to see Robin Curtis back playing a Vulcan, but one disguised as a Romulan.
Was this hyped at the time? Do you guys know? Like, was it like Robin Curtis coming back to Star Trek?
I have to admit, I actually watched this in first run.
Okay.
And I don't remember any sort of Robin Curtis hype because I...
I didn't know who Robin Curtis was.
Okay. But that's the thing. Like, I don't think I had seen The Search for Spock by that point. I think the only... Star Trek film I had seen at this point was actually the motion picture, which I watched with my parents when I was a tiny little kid.
You're like, is this the continuing human adventure?
Yes. Robin Curtis hype camp.
You were looking for the Persis Kambada return.
Yes. That's
like...
kind of dark camp.
Yeah, I think she passed it.
I think
point?
She had,
yeah. She had, okay, yeah. That is dark then.
This is kind of more, for me, it was more like when I rewatched the episode, it's like, oh, Robin Curtis is in? Where have I seen her before? And then it's like, oh. Yeah, then I realized.
There's only one other place you've seen her before.
This is why this episode keeps giving. Every time I watch it, there's something new.
Thank you, Andy.
And then this is the first time I've ever watched it with like a critical...
Right.
Well, let me ask you this, Andy, and this is, I think, what Cam was maybe touching upon, and I feel similar to a certain degree, but do you think that this episode would have been even stronger as a single-part episode versus a two-part, or do you think it justified itself as a 90-minute adventure with the crew?
I'm still okay with it. I'm still okay with it as the two-parter because I thought the pacing was okay.
Okay.
But I'm still okay with the pacing.
Right.
Cam, let me ask you this. What would you have trimmed out of this episode? Maybe a lot of the scenes on that ship or I don't know. Because I like the Enterprise stuff.
Yeah, I love the Enterprise stuff, but I do feel like if you're cutting it down to an hour, you're losing a chunk of the data stuff.
Yeah.
Like probably the Klingon stuff. You're not having that scene of him pouring out wine and what have you.
So I'm okay with it. If that's the case, I'm okay with this being a two-parter then because... You're right. That's what you're going to cut out. Because this was essentially... It started off as a Riker story, and it became a Picard story.
Right.
And so if it's a Picard story, you're losing all that Enterprise goodness.
What's interesting is the original script that they purchased, Riker was not a factor in the story.
And that was actually my favorite part in all of part one.
Yeah, I think Riker was actually really interesting in this.
Yeah.
I like to see Riker kind of undercover because... Like, Jonathan Frakes is the worst undercover operative ever, because all he does is smirk and
remember
like, that, smile the whole time.
Remember the one with the time travel, Time Zero, where he's the undercover policeman?
Yeah. He had his whistle.
Like, I would, if I were, like, in Starfleet and I had to go undercover, I would not be taking Riker.
Well,
your place is on the bridge.
Yes.
and we know that when Riker goes undercover in an episode like, say, First Contact, he gets around.
He gets, yeah, really. He gets the like Third Contact. Zing.
Yes. Okay, well, you know, you just brought up Time Zero, Andy. How do you guys, because when we look at two-parters, I would say these are the two lightest among all the two-parters. Like, they're supposed to be lighter adventures.
Yeah.
Which one do you think was more successful being, like, just kind of a swashbuckling adventure, Andy? This one or Time Zero?
That's tough. Because I like Time Zero a lot as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Cam and you and I agreed. We both really found Time Zero to be very consistent.
Yeah, I like Time Zero more. One thing that was really going through my head watching this is, like, when we, you know, going through all these two-parters, we've talked in like almost every one we've talked about, like the big iconic moments of each episode. You know, you go through, you know, Worf being escorted out at the end of Redemption. There's tons of stuff in Best of Both Worlds. You know, these are the four lights. Data and Lore standing up over all the Borg at the end of Descent Part 1. Is there any big iconic moment in this?
Now, I'll acknowledge this. Because these big iconic moments, it's mostly what sticks in me from childhood.
Yeah.
I remember people getting zapped a lot.
Like, I would say to me, what my main memory was, and I just saw it 2 years ago, but my main memory that stuck with me was just Robin Curtis dressed as a Romulan.
Okay. Andy, what about you? What's the most iconic moment from this episode that maybe something that stuck with you since childhood?
I kind of like the very last scene where Picard defeats the Resonator.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And that shows how, like...
You know what? I had forgotten all about that scene until we actually got there, and then remembered it.
Yeah, me too.
Well, that could actually be because I have watched the episode recently.
Right.
So I don't really remember what happened.
Admit it, Andy. You watch it about once a week. You're like, I can't get through my Sunday before work unless I watch this one.
Like, to me, the Raiders of the Lost Ark ending is it's a good idea, but the execution I think leaves a lot to desire. And I don't blame Next Generation for this. I blame the fact that, like, you look at the resources that went into the making of that final scene of Raiders of the Lost Ark. That was never going to happen in a TV budget.
Really?
Yeah, with, you know, TV effects, et cetera, et cetera. So, I just don't think it works. Like, I feel like it should be something awesome. Like, I feel like when she unveils this weapon and uses it, we should be like, oh my god, we are
what
seeing...
What have we done?
Yes, yes, like Hell Unleashed or something.
Instead, it looks like she picked it up from a craft fair.
Well, and also, you can only kill one person at a time.
Yeah.
And it takes, like, 10 seconds to charge up.
But if no one charges her, they just, like, stand back like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Well, I was thinking maybe, you know, it's like the Scarecrow. It makes you frozen in fear as well.
Right,
because
sure.
It looked like that's what was happening.
Yeah.
I like the Scarecrow's weapon more, myself. His noxious gas.
Fear gas, yeah. I mean, and, you know... In Raiders or in The Last Crusade, you have the incredible effect of, like, you know, the rapid aging or the melting or whatever. The, you know, Cable pulling the actor backwards while a digital thumbprint is on top of them.
Yeah, kind of lame. Yeah. I do wonder how it looked like without the special effects, because I just remember this one moment with Robin Curtis shaking the weapon at Picard. And... Like on
you
set,
I'm behind the scenes thing.
Yeah, like, well, I'm just like on set. I'm sure it looked quite lame. Mm-hmm. So there you go, guys. So what do you think? Does Worf have much of a future as a health and safety inspector?
I don't think he's a very good one.
I do like how this Klingon warrior was using bureaucracy to get the job done, though.
Yes.
So there's something to admire.
Yeah. I mean. This just felt like a little diversion. And the thing is, like, about this two-parter is I really enjoyed the diversions. I have nothing, like, really negative to say about any of the diversions, whether it's the, you know, the opening bar scene or all the Data and Command stuff. Like, to me, that's where the fun is.
It's the central storyline that...
It's the central story that, for me, is just kind of dead on arrival.
Okay, go ahead.
I was going to say, one thing I realized with this is there's no B story. I don't know. And thinking back, maybe that's like a two-parter thing. There's not always... Well, that's not always true.
I mean, you could see, I guess, the conflict between Worf and Data. It's pretty minor. It's... But, you know...
That's a C story, Cam.
That's a C story. Yeah.
I would say that the weakest part of this... Because I like the Galen stuff, but I think the weakest part was whenever Bran was on screen, though.
Right, yes. And don't you...
Like you said, he was on screen a lot. And,
a lot. He talked a lot.
Yeah, so... Honestly, I think this would have been a far more memorable episode if we had cast, like, a stronger, more charismatic actor in this particular role.
What I think would have helped a lot, too, is, because Lord knows they had enough time, fleshing out other crew members on the mercenary ship. Because there's all this talk about, where are the loyalties aboard this ship? We only really talked to Robin Curtis's Romulan.
Yeah, and Narek.
Who?
Barely.
he's the only other person that
he's
we ever
oh
spoke
yeah,
to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Right. Oh, and then there the was guy. That one woman who had the head thing going on.
The redhead, yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, but like why not give those characters some personality so that
like, I feel like this episode would have really fired on all cylinders if it was constantly shifting allegiances with, like, personalities that kind of popped in the crew, where we were like, okay, like, because Brian is obviously not working out so great, but if you got the other two that are really compelling, it's sort of the juggling act of, like, well, who's on what side? You have them shifting between Picard and Riker. I think that would have been really interesting.
Yeah.
I think what saves it for me is I just love watching Patrick Stewart in this episode.
No, you know, just his facial expressions throughout, his line delivery. He is chewing the scenery here.
Yeah, I could never make the claim that either him or Jonathan Frakes are phoning it in.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, both of them, like, they're both putting on, like, I should say Picard and Riker are both putting on performances. Mm-hmm. I think they're having fun as Picard and Riker. Like, those two characters.
Picard and Riker are having fun.
Yeah, they're having fun with this, even though they realize it's a life and death situation. Yeah. I love Picard gets to call Riker a second-rate officer.
Yeah.
I wonder how long he's had that one chambered.
Yes.
You know?
And there's so many, and every time there's a scene with Brann in it, it's either with one of those two.
Yeah,
so I think that keeps it interesting for me.
Yeah, like when him and Riker on their lounge furniture in in Brann's room.
Did you notice Brann could barely like get his feet onto the floor?
It looked like very uncomfortable furniture.
Yeah,
and he was facing in awkward positions, so they couldn't really look at each other.
Well, let me ask you this. So we didn't get a straight answer, and I think it's good that they left the conclusion ambiguous, but did Data bring Riker to the brig, or was Data in on the joke?
No, he absolutely put him in the brig.
Cam, what do you think?
Well, I feel he took him to the brig, but I feel like also Data would probably not do that.
Okay.
Don't you think, like, in other episodes, would you have thought Data would be doing this?
No, but I that's why I interpret it as a joke. Like, I think Data was just joking around.
I don't know. I didn't get the vibe that he was joking.
You honestly think that Data, like, put...
Well, also...
Confined Riker to the brig because...
When Data... I think Data was in his mode where, you know, like, where he took Worf into the...
into the ready room,
the ready room and kind of dressed him down, right? He's definitely in, like, I'm serious. I'm in serious captain mode here.
Yeah, and I think he's still in captain mode.
Yeah,
Point. He is in command.
Yeah.
Technically.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I do appreciate there's two different ways to interpret it, though. You know, and I think you guys both make good arguments, so.
Yeah.
Anyway. Guys, do we have any wrapping thoughts on Gambit's part 1 and 2?
Well, I would like to say, like, you know, we're talking about the performance, you know, Riker and Picard are putting on the bridge in front of these buffoons. Would anyone buy this performance? Like, how dumb do you have to be?
Brann was pretty dumb.
Yeah.
He is very dumb. But, like, how is it, like, even Talera is like...
Who are you?
Yeah, like, she's going
really, who are you?
Like, she, you know, at least through part one, she appears to be buying this.
Yeah. Maybe the rest of this crew just did not have that much experience with humans.
Yeah.
And so they didn't know that this is an example of bad acting on the part of these humans.
Sure.
I don't know.
I think this actually is just the way to highlight Picard's strength as a, as kind of, as a negotiator, as a mediator, as a very excellent diplomat. Like how he sets up.
Right.
How he sets up Riker to succeed in the very first scene on the mercenary ship. Say, you know, first saying, oh, you know, he's this horrible guy, and then kind of giving him the opportunity to save the day.
Yeah.
With the computer.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I had a question for you guys about the Vulcan isolationists.
Yeah.
So problem solved.
Yes.
Okay. Because, I mean, you know, they stopped her, but that's it.
I honestly think she doesn't have any friends. This is just like her own pet project.
Was she the only Vulcan isolationist?
Well, yes. They are isolationists.
She's so isolationist, she like separated herself from all the other Vulcans as well.
Right.
She was all on her own here.
Like, doesn't this seem like a thread you would have maybe talked about at some point in the future?
I would have liked it, obviously, but we have to leave more of that arc-based storytelling to, say, Deep Space Nine. And it just wasn't in the wheelhouse for Next Gen at the time.
In Season 7 when they're making masks and Sub Rosa?
Well, you know what? Like, honestly, like, unless they really, really wanted to, you know, follow up on a thread, you just wouldn't hear that about it again, essentially. You'd have maybe Sela return. You have lore return. It's mostly about recurring characters, those kinds of story arcs and character arcs, more so than just ongoing story threads. Right. So I think it's just a matter of filmmaking or television at the time, I should say.
They left it for the anthology series.
Yes.
That's true.
But Andy, I don't know if you heard the news. Brian Fuller, the showrunner / creator of the new series, he has come out and denied that it's going to be an anthology series.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh. So we did debate this in last week's podcast, but what that actually means, maybe it could be left open to interpretation. There could be some sort of anthology element to it.
Yeah.
We'll have to see. Mm-hmm. But of course, listeners, go back to Andy Chan's first appearance on the show, in which we discuss possibilities for an anthology series.
I was wondering if you guys were as mind-numbed as I was watching all the stuff of Picard testing artifacts.
I found it fascinating.
I would have cut all that stuff.
On the lamest machine ever, where it's just like light bulbs that glow.
Yeah, four of them or five of them or whatever with an artifact in the center.
I think there were some process improvements he could have made to that.
Perhaps. Hey, he was able to improve their targeting by a factor of 10, so there you go.
It's true. I just felt like they could have done more with that sort of stuff. Like, I know archaeology in real life is boring, having taken archaeology. A lot of it was about like sifting for corn pieces and stuff like that, or dirt.
Maze.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like, that's what you would test, is the age of the maze you find in the dirt. Things like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is TV. It's like a visual medium. And, you know, like, I'm not expecting Picard to go full Indiana Jones. Like, that would just be ridiculous if he's like running around outrunning like natives carrying an artifact or whatever. But, you know,
it's a TV budget, Cam, so we get this.
It is a TV budget, yes. But, you know, we kick off the whole artifact thread, you know, during the phaser fight where they find a broken piece of pottery. And then, of course, they have to grab the pottery and run.
Yes.
Which I'm like, okay. And then, you know...
Hey, look, I'm sure this is all archaeology porn for legit archaeologists watching this back in the day.
Do you think there was an archaeology member on staff, like a consultant?
There had to be to write that dialogue.
Did there?
No, I swear there's got to be a consultant. It just has to be. Because it sounds... Well, I don't know. As non-archaeologist, anything would fool me.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I guess as a trained archaeologist, I have to say it didn't fool me. I want to just read some comments, actually. Just on from actually Brennan Braga and Ron Moore on this episode.
Okay.
Brennan Braga said he was not attracted to the campy swashbuckling elements and was afraid it would look corny. He says, I don't think we did campiness well. And he was not happy with this episode.
Well, there you go.
And Ron Moore commented, I felt we ran out of story in part two.
Well,
advantage Cam.
Well, you know what? They can take it up with Andy Chan.
Right.
I'll defend this to the end.
There you go.
So should we just give our final thoughts on Gambit before we sign off?
Sure. Andy.
It's a classic episode that stands the test of time.
Nice.
I would say it's a solid episode of Next Generation. I didn't find it to be a slog, but I do think it would have been a pretty good, fun one-part episode.
Right. Yeah, I'm not a fan at all.
At all.
Well,
there's good stuff.
I think there's good stuff in almost every episode of Star Trek.
Yeah.
So,
but I think this had a significant amount of good stuff,
I would say,
interspersed with stuff that I can understand why you had issues with.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the central story I just didn't find involving or interesting. And I'm going to be very interested because I would imagine you and I at some point in the very near future are going to do like a ranking the Star Trek TNG two-parters.
Yes. Probably August, I'm guessing. Maybe early September.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. So I will really be interesting to see where this places in my grouping.
Yeah. Okay. I kind of have an idea where you'll place it in your grouping, but...
Well, we won't spoil it.
Listeners, you can look forward to where I'm going to place it in my grouping.
Right.
Before we wrap up this episode, Cam, we have a great letter from one of our listeners that you're going
to
read.
Tyler, why don't you just like kind of set up this letter? Because this is a response to something that was going on recently.
Yeah, sure. I mean, a few episodes ago, we had spoken on the podcast about... just reactions that we get from social media and how Cam had been banned from this one Star Trek group. Cam, all you ever did was just post links to our podcast. You weren't posting anything racy or anything like that. And I guess I had assumed that some of your Brile talk had inflamed
followers of Brile.
Yeah, and so that's why you've been kicked out, because we had a comment from somebody known as moderator, and after I said moderate this, you were kicked off within hours.
Yes, yes.
So anyways, we do have a follow-up message. Somebody did send us some wonderful mail.
Yes. So the mysterious moderator, as I shall call him, sent a message. Says, "Hey losers, I was the one that commented about your giggling insistence on continuing your Vedic Brile running gag." And we do have a Vedic Brile running gag.
Yeah.
"As I didn't name myself moderator, it was your forum that assigned this name to me when I posted the comment. Am I the only one that has done so?" Yes. I can say that, yes. And I don't know why. I'm going to actually look into that. "I had no part in the conspiracy to boot you out of any forum, so quit being paranoid schmucks and just roll with it. Despite your schoolgirl humor, I've enjoyed your podcast, so keep it up. Excluding Brile, of course."
Well, Cam, I think this is a perfect episode to play off your Brile rap.
Not a chance. But I do say, like, I appreciate that we've somehow created a conspiracy that has now been debunked, that has just now caused new conspiracies to form out of it.
Do you think it just makes us look like idiots?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, okay. Oh, for sure. Like, he was not incorrect to call us schmucks.
No, not at all. Or losers. But, so, I can't really argue. Yeah. Okay.
I concede. I'm guessing it used the name moderator because he didn't enter a name. That's my guess.
Sure.
So I guess it defaults to that, which is strange.
No, I think he actually is the moderator from that Star Trek fan Facebook group.
And, oh, okay.
Yeah, so
it's all just a smoke screen to throw us off the scent?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, fair enough. So on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. That's right, moderator. Send us a voicemail. Send us email to that address so we actually don't get this confusion.
Yeah.
None of this would have happened if...
it's all your fault, moderator. Yeah,
but we love you.
Yeah, next week we actually have a pretty fun episode lined up. We're going to be ranking all the captains of Star Trek. At least all the ones that were the main fellows that we've been following here.
Yeah, because, I mean, Captain Stiles.
I mean, he's a clear number one for both of us.
Right. Now,
and it's just not fair to everybody else.
Of course. Andy, I just want to know now, who is your favorite captain?
Picard.
Okay.
No contest?
No contest. Absolutely.
Okay, well, I'll be very curious whether that proves true when we do our rankings.
Yes, and by Captain Picard, Andy, of course, is referring to Shinzon from yes. Star Trek Nemesis. Yes. Star Trek Nemesis is Andy's favorite film.
I was going to maybe mount an argument against Picard, but I can't mount an argument against Shinzo.
No, not at all.
That just stops me dead. You can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V is in Vulcan Isolationist Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R. R is in Romulan Artifact, Eporton.
And Andy?
You can find me at Sockbot, Sockbot.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.